This is Jennifer Hunt with Gillian Hiley on the 6th of August 2014 at her home in Halifax, West Yorkshire. Gillian, would you just like to introduce yourself?
Yes, as Jennifer's told you, I'm Gillian Hiley. I've been a member of WRVS now for 49 years. I'm hoping to make it until 50. I joined in 1965, really because we had a car and I had nothing. No, we didn't have a car. I've made a mistake there. We didn't have a car. I had a driving licence and nothing to drive. So I thought if I joined Meals on Wheels, I would be able to have driving to do at least once a week. So I went to WRVS office and did a test drive. In those days, we had to do a test drive. It was still a remnant from the civil... now then, what did they call it? I just can't remember its name. Civil defence, that's the word I'm after. I'm after civil defence. When everybody who wanted to drive the WRVS vehicle had to do a slight test. I obviously passed because I was taken on for Meals on Wheels. At the time, I was a teacher on a part-time basis, teaching in the mornings and being free in the afternoons. So I did the Meals on Wheels during the school holidays. It wasn't without some adventures sometimes. I can remember in a Christmas holiday when somebody fell down with the container, which was a large thermos flask of gravy, and all the people who were getting their dinners those days, that day, had to have it without gravy. It was somewhere on the road in Halifax.
And what's your earliest memory of WBS, of WRVS?
I think it must be during the war, when the WVS lady came round selling savings stamps, national savings stamps, and she came each week dressed in her green uniform, wearing what I know now was the original uniform with the original sort of pork pie hat.
And what did you know about WRVS before you joined?
I don't think I knew very much at all about it. I just knew that they did Meals on Wheels, which is what most people do. I perhaps knew a little bit about their work for the troops during the war and serving the teas and all the other things that they did. But for anybody who doesn't know all the things WRVS did, or WVS did, they really should read one of the books on the history of WVS and just see. You'd be amazed at what people did.
And you mentioned that you became a volunteer because you wanted something to do, but were there any other reasons for joining WVS?
No, I don't think so. I just wanted something to do. I obviously wanted voluntary work. I come from a family that's always done voluntary work and been in service, like the fire service, the police force, and nursing.
And you started off with Meals on Wheels. How would you describe your role in Meals on Wheels?
The first thing we had to do for Meals on Wheels was we had to go to our local office, sign in, go across the road to the town hall and pick up the dinners. They were all in containers and they were then put into a hot lock. But before we could get the dinners, we had to go and set charcoal alight to warm the hot locks. And then all the dinners came in individual portions, round metal aluminium containers with a lid, just the right number of dinners and just the right number of puddings. All the recipients were expected, when we got there, to have first of all their money ready. Then they had to have a knife, fork and a spoon and a plate. And we served the dinner onto the plates and served the pudding, and they were nearly always sitting at the table ready to eat it. It really was an eye-opener to me because I hadn't lived in Halifax all that long. I came from an area where I lived on a housing estate built just after the war, and Halifax itself was an eye-opener with its industrial parts, tiny little alleys. People lived in the most amazing houses. They didn't have back doors. They lived in what they call through by light houses, which have a front door and the back of the house goes into the hillside. And I was amazed at the poor conditions that some people lived in. I can remember one old man slept on a pile of rags in the corner, and another old man whose spoon was so old it only had half a bowl on it, it had worn away.
And how did you feel about experiencing these conditions that people lived in?
Well, it was certainly an eye-opener to me. I doubt if I thought much more about it than that. I had been at college in London. I had been to one or two of the East End tenements and done voluntary work there with a group called World University Service. I had then been absolutely appalled at the conditions that people lived in. So perhaps Halifax wasn't such a shock.
And what types of meals were you serving people?
I suppose they were a meat and two veg and a pudding with custard. There must have been days when there was fish, but I don't really remember fish because I don't ever remember taking any parsley sauce.
Mm.
But perhaps in those days the fish was only given on a Friday. And gradually the dinners changed. They then got packed into tinfoil containers, and there were those to do. And then, of course, long after I'd given up Meals on Wheels, they got onto freeze-dried.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. And what were the people receiving the meals like, apart from sort of the two old men you've already told me about?
Generally, really nice people. Really salt-of-the-earth people, most of them. It took me a while to get used to the people in Halifax, and it took them a while to get used to me because they saw me as somebody who spoke differently. I was a teacher. At my Darby and Joan Club, I think they were in awe of me, really, mainly because I spoke so differently from them. They'd all been mill workers and factory workers, but they really were the salt of the earth, as I realised. Very outspoken, sometimes brusque, took a bit of getting used to. And the people we went to were rather like that. Some of them were pleased to see you. Some of them were standing on the doorstep looking for you. Some of them wanted to give you presents or bars of chocolate or something like that. Some of them said nothing. Some people were poorly, some people were very well.
And how would you describe the area you were delivering meals in, so Halifax itself?
Well, as I've said, Halifax was a hilly area. I came from a place where it was fairly flat in the Midlands. Narrow streets, cobbled streets, back-to-back houses galore. Washing was strung up across the streets. You often had to move a line of washing so that you could just creep underneath it. Difficult to drive sometimes because in bad weather it was the hills were difficult to negotiate. Mostly we were delivering in the town areas. People in the outlying areas didn't get Meals on Wheels until much later when more people received them. But all this was organised by the social services.
And where did you collect the meals from?
First of all, we took our meals from the town hall, a place at the back of the town hall. Later on, we collected them from a school. And I know that in latter years, after I'd given it up, the meals were cooked at old people's homes. They were cooked in various places.
And who did you work with on the round, on the Meals on Wheels round?
Oh, I worked with anybody who needed a partner, because I was just a spare time person. I didn't have a regular round. But I can think of one lady that I've worked with in WRVS, and she's still working with us. She was a real team, because there was her and her husband and their daughter, and they did it once a week.
And how did you feel about the Meals on Wheels service that you were providing at the time?
Oh, I think I thought it was very good, and good value for money. I really couldn't tell you what it cost now. We had a few funny instances. I can think of one old lady. It was the norm that if somebody wasn't in and you'd got a spare dinner, because not always people couldn't always let you know, you left the dinner with the last person on the round. So they had two dinners to eat. This one old lady, when we got there, she's sitting there and she said, "I can't eat my dinner, I've lost my false teeth." So we did a hunt for these false teeth, and we didn't find them. But we did leave her with two dinners, and we said we would arrange for somebody to come and take her to the dentist's. When the person went a few days later to take this old lady to the dentist, she's sitting there with a set of shining false teeth, and she was obviously asked where she'd got them from. "Nice to see you've found your false teeth." "Oh no," she said, "these aren't my false teeth. My home help had a spare pair. We've filed a bit off and they fit me a treat." That was really good. I've never forgotten.
And then after you sort of been doing Meals on Wheels, you started in afternoon clubs. And what was your role in
clubs? Well, I started afternoon clubs almost as soon as I had started doing Meals on Wheels in the holidays, because I saw a notice in the local paper that said they wanted a treasurer at one of the local afternoon clubs. And so I applied to go. And I stayed there probably about 8 or 9 years. In that time, my home circumstances changed a little bit, because my husband took over the family business, and I was required to work in it in the afternoon, because it had a shop attached to a small plumbing business. And so I wasn't any longer free in the afternoons to go and do the Darby and Joan Club work. So that's really how I came to start the Luncheon Club. But at the same time, shortly after I'd taken on Meals on Wheels and this treasurership, I worked with a lovely old lady who was rather like Lady Reading. She always reminded me of Lady Reading, and she knew Lady Reading. She was one of the original WBS ladies, very genteel. And she taught me really everything I knew about working with people. "Keep the people happy, dear. Keep the people happy." That was her mantra. And so I worked with her. She grew more frail, and so I took her to more and more places, and we went to some lovely afternoon teas and Christmas parties at the Darby and Joan clubs, in the days when, if you weren't there before all the members came, you could hardly make your way through the room. There were so many members there. And we used to do various things together. She was very good at knowing the local council work people, the council employees, and getting things done. And people used to meet us in the street and say, "Oh, Mrs. Johnson, I'm having trouble with my rent," or something like that. And she would say, "I know, dear, who you can talk to," and she would sort things out. So I learnt a lot from her.
Yeah.
And by the time I was ready to, I've lost my thread a little bit. By the time I was ready to I'll just do that a bit again. When my husband took the business, I was required to work in our shop in the afternoons, and so I needed something to do in the afternoons, in the mornings, because I was free in the mornings. So with a friend, we looked round and we decided we would start this luncheon club. We both had an interest in cooking. We'd both done a city and guilds at college, and she had worked in catering during the holidays. She was also a teacher. So we started this luncheon club. I'm just considering now how she had time to come and do it during the day. I don't really know. She must have retired and her children must have just been at school, I think. And we started with 12 people. With Mrs. Johnson's help and with the help of the director of social services, I suppose, at that time. It was just about 1973 when we had changeover of the local government areas, and Halifax took in a lot of the outlying areas and we became Calderdale. So with their help and a small grant and the help of the local church, the local Methodist church, we started with 12 people and a nice team of volunteers, because we had 4 WRVS people and the local church where we were working made us a team of volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
They were really good to us. I mean, half the credit for the success of the luncheon club goes to that local church as well and their volunteers, who all joined WRVS.
Yeah.
Yeah, they all became members. And so we started with our 12 people, and we got the 12 people by walking up the street where the church was going, where the club was going to be, and asking them if they'd like to come for their dinners. And they did. That was the first week. The second week we had 20 people, and by the third week we were up to 40 and a waiting list. So it just snowballed by word of mouth. There was nothing like it really in the area.
No.
Nothing at all to do. They were mostly local people. They could all walk to where we were, mainly. And most of them lived in terrace houses, little back-to-backs, cottages, just the general sort of Halifax area, because we were in King Cross area, which was a very tight community. It's all been pulled down now. But I learnt a lot about King Cross and the names of the streets and that from where we delivered the dinners.
Yeah.
And from where these people lived.
And how did your role change at the club over the 33 years that you were helping there?
I don't know whether it did change, really. I went in as the organiser, planning the menus. I suppose I took on more responsibility as my friend left. I certainly learned how to cook for large numbers from her. Mm-hmm. We still had the social side, not the social side to her really, the welfare side, which I used to do. I used to go and see people if they had problems, and if they were recommended to us, I very often used to go and visit them. Looking back, I wonder how I found the time to do it, but I did. If they didn't come, we always went to see why they weren't there. And that was virtually what I did all the years. In latter years, we moved one of the afternoon clubs to join with the luncheon club, and so it became an all-day club. And somebody else did the afternoon part of it. I used to go to the shop in the mornings, in the afternoons, and Dorothy continued it in the afternoons. And she still works with me. And now she does a lot more of this sort of welfare side of it than I do.
And in the afternoon clubs, what sort of activities were...
Oh, that was something else. That was my job, to find the speakers and what to do. Oh, we had, in those days, people were most generous with their time. They would rarely charge us to come, and they just enjoyed coming. And so the club that I was involved in was called Grove Court, and that was in a sheltered housing complex. So the first job we had to do was go and knock on all the doors and collect all the people from their homes and bring them down to the communal room. And then I would have arranged a speaker. We would sing our opening song, which escapes me. I've thought about it for so long. And then the speaker started. We had speakers about anything and everything. In those days, there were very few slideshows. I can't really remember having slides. I can remember people talked about their pets, their experiences. We had a lot of entertainment when people sang and played the piano and played a guitar or something like that. And then we had a cup of tea and then everybody went home. At least once a year we used to have an outing. We went to Southport or Scarborough. Southport was good because it was a good distance to go and nice and flat when we got there. Blackpool was popular, St Anne's,
mm-hmm.
nearly always with a fish and chip tea at the end of it. And then the club continued long after I'd left it. They're all finished now.
Yeah.
There isn't. There's only one club left, which is no longer a WRBS club. They left us some years ago, but it's really nice to see that the club that we started is really going well. Because the first club in Halifax started, 1948. I have a list of the food that they bought for the very first meeting.
Mm-hmm. And at the luncheon club, what sort of food were you serving?
Oh, always meat and two veg. First of all, soup, then meat and two veg. The most popular dish of all was meat and potato pie. Always popular. It's very much a Halifax dish, or a Yorkshire dish, is meat and potato pie. Always a cooked pudding of some description. It might have been a sponge pudding. It might have been a rice pudding. That was really the favourite. Ginger pudding was also very popular. We might have had Bakewell tart. It just depended. If I'd got a full staff, we could have a better pudding,
mm-hmm.
or pudding that took more doing. People developed their own strengths. I mean, one or two people joined us, learned something about cooking, and then went on to do a job in the catering industry. And we always had, we always finished with a cup of tea. So we always had soup and bread, a main course, a pudding and tea. Once a year we had an afternoon tea, and we didn't have any outings from the luncheon club. Once it became a day club, an all-day club, the afternoon people used to go on outings.
And apart from going on outings and doing having the speakers come in, did the afternoon club have any other activities that it got involved with?
No, I don't think so, because Dorothy did the afternoon club and they were very keen on having trips off. They had a lot of trips and always well organised. And until fairly recently, Dorothy was still organising trips with her husband for the present luncheon club. They would take a trip to the local theatre when the round table or the Rotary did a senior citizens evening.
And how would you describe the building that you held the lunch club in?
Oh, well, it was very good because it was a church built in about 1860, 1850, and then it had been renovated and modernised. And upstairs now, they put a floor in, upstairs was the church part and downstairs was a large room which we could accommodate 10 tables quite easily. In the days when we had 60 people, 10 people sat on each table. No, that's wrong. 6 people sat on 10 tables.
And then, did you have any special events that you held at the lunch club? You mentioned afternoon tea.
We did. Every year we had a service to celebrate our own birthday. We started on March 21st. So every March the 21st, we had a very special birthday. We always started with a service in the morning and coffee, and then we went on for lunch. We decorated the tables right from the word go with daffodils. That was a suggestion of one of the ladies from the church. She always made us a cake, and the daffodils were wrapped in tin foil so that everybody could take 2 or 3 daffodils home. And we always had what we called a special dinner. Sometimes that was chicken, sometimes that was salmon. A lot of the times it was salmon, really, because those were the generation where we all considered salmon was a very special party dish.
Mm-hmm.
And we always had trifle made by one of the church members. We used to call it King Cross trifle because Sherry never even entered into it because it was a Methodist church.
Yes.
And I think that was what we had. And I mean, we're still having special parties now for our birthday.
Mm-hmm.
We still tend to have salmon for our birthday and put daffodils on the table. I would like to say that after the 2 years of grant money from the council for the luncheon club, we became self-financing. We didn't mm-hmm. need the money, and it became easier not to take the money because then we were entirely free to do what we wanted yeah. to do. When we took the grant, we were constrained in some respects by what we could do with it.
And how did you manage to self-fund the club?
Well, we made the money for the luncheon club out of the lunches. And it wasn't because we charged a lot of money for mm. them. It was just because I could shop locally, and the shopkeepers nearly always gave us 10% off or something like that. We had a very good butcher who for 30 years delivered the meat every Wednesday morning, which was a great help because, you know, you didn't have to go and get it. We had a greengrocer who delivered. We had a milkman who delivered. The last few years, it was me fetching everything on my way. But it was very handy because I lived about a quarter of a mile from the church premises. It wouldn't have been so good if I'd had to make the journey much further. And the shops were between me and the church. So it was very handy in that respect. Forgotten what you asked me though now.
I was asking how you self-funded these.
Oh yes, and the afternoon club self-funded itself. Later on, when I started a second luncheon club down in town at a centre built specifically for disabled and elderly people, and we had a grant there again. And then somehow, I don't know, the grant sort of disappeared. We had a grant and we bought a deep freeze with it.
Mm-hmm.
With the first club, we bought the cutlery, I remember, with the grant, because all the rest of the things were provided. We didn't need saucepans or anything. And that applied also when we went down to Morris Jagger Centre, which is very well known in Halifax.
And then after, so while you were running the luncheon club and the afternoon club, you also became Old People's Welfare Organiser.
I was already Old People's Welfare Organiser right from about 1967, I should think. I've got a letter somewhere, because in those days somebody wrote to you from London and, or perhaps from Leeds, and congratulated you on being appointed.
Mm. And how did you become Old People's Welfare Organiser?
By being asked by, recommended by Mrs. Johnson, who was already the Old People's Welfare mm-hmm. Organiser, and she got a little bit too elderly, she felt, to do it, and asked by our local area organiser.
And why did you decide to take that role on?
Well, I just liked it. I just liked what I was doing. And it also was something that I could, at a pinch, manage without having to be there personally. Although when many things, people couldn't go, mm-hmm. if I was free, I went and finished it off. I think I've been able to say, I could honestly say that in Halifax, WRVS never gave up anything. They always gave us up.
Mm-hmm.
Premises closed. All people's homes closed, so they didn't need us for trolley shops. Or all people's homes saw how much people liked the trolley shop, and we always gave the funds back to them, but they thought they could make the funds for themselves.
Yeah.
Which didn't always work out that way. We gave all sorts of things back to the homes for mm-hmm. trolley shops.
And what did the role of Old People's Welfare Organiser involve?
Supervising all the 18 Derby and Joan clubs,
mm-hmm.
Keeping them staffed, although people staffed themselves, apart perhaps from club leaders, which was difficult to find if they hadn't got anybody. again, organising and staffing, making certain that the 7 trolley shops worked satisfactorily. And that was something. If people couldn't do the trolley shops, then I used to try and go to those. The very last trolley shop, I'd been doing it myself for about 12 months because I'd retired by then, and I just went to do it for 12 months when there was nobody else. And the day the old people's home closed was trolley shop day, and I was a bit late going, and they'd rung home to see if I was going because they'd got a gift for me. And when I got there, I'd got a big bunch of flowers, but they'd wanted to make certain that I was going.
Yes.
On that very last day. So that was really nice. That was a real thank you. I also organised a dancing club, which we started in another church hall. I think that's it. Have I got anything else on the list there? I did emergency services, but we're talking about old people's welfare, aren't we? And the lunch and clubs.
Got afternoon clubs, trolley shops, dancing club, and lunch and clubs.
Yes, no, those are the 4 aspects. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And how would you describe the trolley shops that were going around the old people's homes?
Oh, they differed a little bit. The basic thing, as you might expect, was they had a trolley to push. Some people took all the goods with them. Sometimes, and this was what we liked, the home could provide us with a room to keep the stuff in, but you had to stock take pretty carefully. And then it was usually a couple of ladies went. They did the shopping for the homes. Whatever they wanted, they shopped for. 2 things stick in my mind. One home where the old folks loved ice cream, and that was always very popular. And another one where this old lady, in quite a different area, where they liked the ice cream was a rural area. They were different sort of people in that home. This other home was more downtown, and this old lady liked Whiskey Mac, which I'd never heard of, but apparently it's some sort of whiskey, very dilute. And so, in order to get the best terms from the warehouse, when we used to shop at a warehouse in town, we bought about 12 bottles of this Whiskey Mac, and poor old soul passed away. So we were left with all these bottles of Whiskey Mac and tins of snuff. She liked Whiskey Mac and snuff, which left us with a bit of a problem anyway. I don't know what we did with the snuff, but I remember we sold the Whiskey Mac on. Those are 2 things I remember. But our workers tried to cater for whatever the people wanted. If they asked us for something, the ladies were very good and they would go and shop for it and bring it the following week.
And were they a bit like the hospital trolley shops where any of the profit went into...
We bought whatever... We kept our books. That was something else I used to supervise very carefully, was all the accounts for all the Derby and Joan clubs. And if we once had a discrepancy and somebody said that they didn't know what was happening to their club funds, and Mrs. Johnson sent me to this Derby and Joan club, it was in the very early days, and she said, "You must say this, my dear, you must stand up and you must read out this balance sheet and tell them that all the money is spent on the club." I think they thought that the money was going to WVS centrally and they wanted it to be on their club. Which, of course, it was.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was self-funding. But with the trolley shops, we would ask what they would like us to buy. And we bought things from hairdryers, nest of tables. Those are the 2 things that stick in my mind. I have got a long list of what one of the shops bought. Kettles, when they started trying to get the people to be a bit more independent, and they gave them little kitchens where they could make a cup of tea in these old folks' homes. Anything that the home wanted. Record players, entertainments, parties we paid for. If they were having a party, that was quite a popular one. Almost anything that they asked us for, we would buy if we'd got sufficient funds. And we did make quite a bit of money because we shopped at the wholesalers. Then wholesalers disappeared and you had to shop at the supermarket. But everything we've done was always self-funding. Nobody in WVS or WRVS expected to make any money or do anything. No, it was always self-funding. In fact, we used to joke, it cost us money to belong.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody ever regretted it. You could have expenses if you wanted to do, but most people didn't bother.
And what, you've already mentioned the dancing club, but what did that involve?
Well, that involved finding two people who knew old-time dancing,
mm-hmm.
and could lead a dance club, and getting some people to go to the dancing club, setting up the bank account, organising the premises, and hopefully finding a treasurer amongst them who would be responsible for the books. If they didn't, I used to do it. I must say that that didn't last all that long. The person who led the dancing club had to have a leg amputated, and his wife didn't really want to do it on her own.
Mm.
There is still a dancing club, which must be a legacy of WRVS,
yes.
going to this day, but nothing to do with WRVS. We sort of closed it. We couldn't find WRVS members to run it.
Mm-hmm.
But they have carried on.
And were you responsible for organising anything else in the area?
Not that I can think of connected with old people's welfare. Emergency services, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But not old people's welfare. Oh, I know what we did. Yes. Amongst the clubs, every year we had a choir concert. A choir festival, because about five of the clubs ran their own choirs, and that was always very successful. And then we served an afternoon tea. We always held that down at the Salvation Army headquarters. And the other thing we did, and I mean this had started, I started the choir festival, but long before then they'd been doing a handicraft exhibition, and we once took the Victoria Hall in town and set up this handicraft exhibition, all in different sections: crochet, lace bobbin, knitting, painting, any sort of handicraft that it could be. And it was a very big affair. We issued very nicely lettered certificates, and people must, I don't think they would pay, perhaps they bought a ticket, because we must have had some way of financing the hire of the hall. But a prize from the WRVS handicraft exhibition was well sought after, really.
Yeah.
We issued cups. We had a cup. In fact, I've got a cup in the box there that's come from somewhere. I don't know what, but where it said, but it says WRVS on it.
Mm-hmm.
And we always used to get the mayor or somebody to present the certificates. So it was a really big affair, was that.
And that was all Darby and Joan.
Darby and Joan clubs, yes, and the luncheon club would be invited. And the, oh, there was another section which wasn't really to do with me, where we worked in a centre for the disabled.
Mm-hmm.
So they were invited to participate.
And can you tell me what happened to your role as Old People's Welfare Organiser over the years?
Well, everything in WRVS changed. It certainly today isn't the organisation that I joined. I have many times been disappointed in the way WRVS has worked out, but I finally feel that they have, in modern terms, got their act together,
mm-hmm.
and is now going somewhere, concentrating on just the elderly. I have to say that a lot of the work we did in Halifax particularly was taken over by Age Concern, who came to Halifax, had a very good organiser, and we somehow seemed to get left behind. I'm hopeful that WRVS is going to go now from strength to strength,
mm-hmm.
Having been in the doldrums and had new ideas here and then new ideas at the new ideas. So I'm hopeful for it now. There are times when I felt like jacking it in. But I don't know, it's been my life as WRVS. My husband and I never had any children, so it just became my child in a way. Yeah, and something my husband always supported me. He must have eaten umpteen cold dinners and cold teas while I went, first of all, to the afternoon clubs, to the parties, and then he warmed up dinners if there was anything left over from the luncheon club. I used to buy what was left over and serve it for his tea. So he has been a really great support to me.
And did you retire from the role of Old People's Welfare Organiser?
No, it just sort of disappeared. I didn't retire from anything. The big downfall for WRVS in Halifax was when the office closed. First of all, I think we lost Meals on Wheels. That really started the decline. We lost Meals on Wheels. And then the office closed. And then we just didn't seem to have anybody in charge of us, quite honestly. I kept my little bit going. I'm just trying to think about emergency services. That continued after the office closed. But when we were having training sessions, nobody seems able to remember just how long the office has been closed. But I would think it's probably 10 years now. Oh, probably longer than that, because it was still open when I retired, and I've been retired 20 years. So probably 12 years, but nobody can actually put a date on it. And I've searched my records and can't find anything about it. But not only did, just before the office closed, WRVS had one of its famous reorganisations, and we were then administered by somebody from West Yorkshire who used to come from Rotherham probably once or twice a week.
And when you were working, when you had a centre, where was it in Halifax?
To begin with, when I first joined, it was Central Halifax, just across the road from the Town Hall, in part of a council building, and we had the ground floor. And you walked in down this little corridor, and you could go to various departments belonging to the council, and we had a little window right at the end of the corridor. And people rapped on the window, and we had a full-time secretary. She opened it to see what they wanted. It was really interesting. People used to come for all sorts of things, because they remembered that WRVS could do miracles. You know, we had that sign, you see it lots of times, that says something like, something we can do at once, miracles take a little bit longer. I think that's right, and we had that on the wall. But people came for all sorts of things. One old man turned up one day with some balls of wool and said, could somebody knit him some socks? My mother-in-law knitted his socks. One old man used to come regularly every week and bring us some dripping, because he was sure that we knew some poor people who would like some dripping to go with their bread. Just everybody came to the window, just came to the window. And if it was something that they needed to see the organiser about, she had an inner sanctuary where she was there most days. But everybody, apart from the secretary, was a volunteer. And when I joined, I have to say that they were mostly middle, upper-class ladies, doctors' wives and people like that. Then gradually other people came. I mean, I'm nobody, really. I was working class in a way. I just happened to train to be a teacher. But it generally changed. And the best workers were the people who had worked in the mills and the offices and themselves. Yeah, we had some really good workers. The clothing department, I never was involved really in the clothing. Occasionally I would collect clothing if there was clothing to be collected, but I never really was involved in that. But they were marvellous with the ladies who worked in the basement. But talking about the basement, that came much later. I can't remember where the clothes were to begin with in the first offices. And then after probably 73, probably about the early 80s, WRVS had this policy that we would buy property. I don't know whether you've come across that before. Yes, and the organiser of the time, it was not me, I always aspired to be the local organiser, but I never could because I was always working and I couldn't have done it justice. And by the time I'd retired and everything was done, we no longer had a local organiser. But the organiser of the time was asked to look round and find some suitable premises where we could meet and run our services. And we moved then to a large terraced house, just a little bit out of the town centre. It was never as convenient for people to come and see us, but we bought, WRVS bought these properties. Three stories and a cellar, as so many houses in Halifax did, a real old Victorian house. And we had the basement set up as a clothing store. People who came to the clothing store, we had a separate entrance. It must have been the servants' quarters when the house had servants, and they went in the back door. Everybody else could come in the front door. We had the organiser and the secretary's office. We had a Meals on Wheels office. And then upstairs, we had a meeting room. We had a little kitchen. And on the very top floor, we had storage space. So it was very well run. And the organiser was responsible for everything. If when there was a burst, it was her job to sort everything out and get us a new tank in the loft, because the water ran all down the stairs. It was really nice, and it was a really good social meeting place for people. And we used to have one or two sort of parties there. Well, we had some really good parties in WRVS when we all took something. And we all ate somebody else's things. Really good. The social life was very good.
Yeah.
And for most people, really, probably came to the work when they were widowed. And in those days, most of them were women. Because I can't subscribe to this idea of dropping the W, because in my experience, the men who've wanted to join us haven't minded at all.
No.
It's just been a joke. But the powers that be tell us we're now a voluntary, Royal Voluntary Service. I'm sorry about that, because it was something that women could do on their own, and it was something that I could do without my husband. My husband jokes now. He says he's Mr. Gillian Hiley, because I became so well known in the town for the work and the photographs. The Courier, the local newspaper, supported us. It nearly always in the Courier. So I became well known in the town, and with not having any family, it helped me to have something to do and make a mark, really. If I'd had any family, it would never have happened. I would have just been at home looking after them.
And how did you feel when they closed the centres?
Oh, very sad, yes. We all regretted it very much. At that time, the luncheon club was still going, so we became people who'd done Meals on Wheels sometimes joined us at the luncheon club. Very often people did Meals on Wheels, trolley shops and luncheon club. They just moved round. So then I suppose we became a bit of a hub at the luncheon club for it. I haven't really thought about it recently. There was a trolley shop still going. I think the trolley shop would still be going, just the one that I finished off in the end. After that, I really haven't thought about it to remember. Time dims the memory and you go on to other things. But, I've had some really good times with WRVS. In the old days, when it was run, have people told you about Hans House in London and places like that?
No.
You've not heard about Hans House?
No.
Well, then I shall tell you, because WVS had its headquarters on Park Lane in Halifax, in London. You knew that, did you? Yes. Well, they also, I mean, they were prestigious premises. They also owned a house, or I imagine they owned it, called Hans House, just at the back of Harrods.
Mm-hmm.
You just walked across the park to get there. And they ran training courses. They did a lot of training. I learnt a lot of things in WRVS. They ran courses. And on one occasion, I don't think I went more than once, I went on a course there, run specifically for people, old people's welfare organisers. And we had talks. It was there for 2 days. They paid our expenses and our accommodation and our food. It was not very palatial, the accommodation. I remember the rooms upstairs were like one long dormitory, and we had curtains between each bed. So it was more like a boarding school, really.
Yeah.
We had a glass of sherry before dinner. But in order not to infringe some rules or something, because they didn't have a license,
mm-hmm.
we all bought a ticket, and then they we exchanged the ticket for the sherry. That's something I remember. And we walked across to Hans House, to Park Lane, Park
mm-hmm.
Lane, because Hans House was in Hans Place.
Yeah.
We walked across to Park Lane on the two mornings, and we had lectures there. I also, they moved after that and they went to a place in Brixton. Have you heard of that one?
Yes,
yeah.
In Brixton.
Mm. Yes, probably about 1986. Presumably some of the archives. One of the things in Park Lane was a beautiful tapestry.
Mm-hmm.
I hope you've still got that somewhere in the archives. It was a marvellous tapestry. It hung on the wall. And it had sections, I believe Lady Reading did it.
Mm-hmm.
It had sections of all the WRVS work. If you remind me, I'll find you a picture of
yeah.
it. Because I think I did make inquiries, and I think somebody said you've got it in the archives now. Unless it's gone down to Cardiff. I hope you've got it, because it was a real marvellous piece of work. And it really did tell you a lot about WRVS. After Brixton, I don't know what happened to them. I don't know where they went after Brixton. Oh, I know, they went to Berkshire somewhere. Somewhere in Oxfordshire.
Milton Hill.
Milton Hill, that's right. And then, of course, they went to Cardiff. So I was lucky. I had one or two really nice experiences. I was lucky enough to be invited to tea, afternoon tea, with the Queen Mother. That came to a rather sad end, actually, because 12 people from York, from Halifax and Leeds and that were invited.
Mm-hmm.
And they invited me to go about 11 o'clock. I remember it was one Wednesday morning. We were doing the luncheon club and she rang up. Mrs. Helena Foster,
mm-hmm.
you might have come across her name. You didn't see anybody in Brig House, did you?
No.
Well, she was the organiser in Brig House. She was OBE. She rang me up. She was one of the upper class ladies and said, would I like to go, you know, my dear, would you like to go for tea with the Queen Mother? Well, of course I would. But by the time I got home to tell my husband, she'd made a mistake and I was the 13th and only 12 people could go. So that got cancelled. Another nice thing I did was, apart from getting the MBE, I went to represent WRVS not so long ago, I didn't meet Prince Charles, but the Queen.
Mm-hmm.
It was held at St James's Palace. I'm sure Alice was there. Yes, it isn't so long ago, isn't this? This is probably
no,
10 years ago, I would think, even less. And a lot of important people came and we were trying to generate funds for them, for WRVS.
Yes.
Because I remember speaking to Nicholas. Somebody who reads the news on television, not Nick Ross, the other Nicholas Owen.
Mm.
I remember speaking to him, and I made a little book about it, which I can show you. I made a tiny, tiny little book with quotes from what our luncheon club people said.
Yes.
Because I thought it was small, it would go in my handbag, but I'll show it to you
mm-hmm.
before you go. What else did I do? I was invited to a garden party, but unfortunately I was going to be on holiday, so somebody else from Halifax took my place for that. So I've had some really good experiences. Oh, I was present at the 50th celebrations in Westminster Abbey. Mm-hmm. Would be 1988, yes, 50th yeah. anniversary in Westminster Abbey. 50th, I can't remember. Oh, 50th, that was when the Queen came to Milton Hill, mm-hmm. and I was invited to go there. Several of us went there. That was very nice, a very nice occasion. And then, of course, I had the MBE, which was lovely, a real honour, and I was very proud. And my husband was proud as well. And I have to say, some of that medal belonged to him, mm-hmm. and a lot of it belonged to all the marvellous helpers that I've had over the years, and the ones I've still got. They're never down, these four particular. There's about four of us left. We go every year now to the cenotaph.
Yeah.
There's only me can bend down now to put the wreath, to lay the wreath. Dorothy can still manage to walk, and the others just go to the service. We're getting old. I was young when I joined, you see. That was something else. I was only in my 30s when I joined. So it made a difference to the energy I had and what I could do. And a car, once we'd got a car, which wasn't long after I'd joined WRVS.
And also during your time with WRVS, you were involved with emergency services.
Yes.
So how would you describe your role with them?
Yes. I suppose we had a good emergency services organiser, and she used to organise exercises for us. Now, in those days, we had the Cold War, and we were doing one in five.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that WRVS did was we used a soyer boiler. Have you heard of a soyer boiler?
Yes, we've got one in the archive.
Oh, good. Good, we used to practice stoking this thing in the backyard at Prescott Street. It became difficult to remember how to put it together. But we always kept it. I was really sorry to see that go from Prescott Street, because I felt that epitomised WRVS. In fact, I was sorry to see a lot of things go from WRVS, and I rescued as much as I possibly dare. But I couldn't get the soyer boiler. I hadn't got anywhere to put it.
Mm-hmm.
But that we practiced cooking on that, and then emergency services. When I first started, we had what they called a bucket. Have you come across the emergency
No.
bucket? Well, into this emergency bucket was we put all sorts of things that we could use in an emergency. Cloths and towels and, in latter days, a bottle of water. We always had a lipstick. A lipstick was always something that was on the list. I can probably find you a list, although I haven't seen it. It was recognised, a list was issued, and mm-hmm. these were what we put into our bucket. If you were tired, you could turn your bucket upside down and sit on it. And if you needed a toilet, when there very often weren't any, you've got a bucket handy. That was the joke mm-hmm. about it, bucket and chuck it. And that was our emergency bucket, full of these things, and we all took that if there was a call out. We were also taught how to light a trench cooker, where you took the bricks and you made this trench cooker. I can remember doing that on two occasions. On one occasion, we went up on the moors in somebody's back garden where they lived up on the moors, and we made this trench cooker, and we cooked our sausages, which came out absolutely black. But just like children, we all sat and ate them. And there were a good, there was a good turnout. Another occasion, the then organiser did it in her garden, down on her driveway, and we built this trench cooker out of bricks. I'm sure you've seen photographs
of
them. Yeah. Mm. And we practised there. We had one or two exercises where there was a mock emergency.
Mm-hmm.
One which we made up, people had to be evacuated from their homes because there was a big chemical spillage or something. And we set up the church as a rest centre, and we established a rest centre. And we all had bits of paper saying what people were to say and do and everything. And we recorded, I still have the records for that, and what we were asked to do. Somebody brought a canary, which we had to look after, and somebody else brought a dog.
Mm-hmm.
Another occasion we did an exercise with the police, well, the police reserves, the special constables. This was a Sunday morning. We knew that these were coming up, of course.
Yeah.
And we had to report to our office on the Sunday morning, and we would get a message as to what was to happen. Well, this was to be a plane had been seen over the moors, not far from where we live, about 3 miles upon the moors, and people had been seen bailing out.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to go and see what had happened to them. So we set off after much deliberation about whether we should go or not, because the police wouldn't give us a proper map reference, a grid reference.
No.
And the organiser said we couldn't go without a grid reference, so we were somewhat delayed. Anyway, we set off with all our equipment and everything, and we established a sort of rest centre in the lounge of a pub up on the moors. And some of us joined the police and walked through the woods looking for people. Somebody else drove the van down to the other end. It was by a reservoir. We found one person. I think the others gave up and went home, quite honestly. And it was quite interesting. I wouldn't say we acquitted ourselves terribly well, but in the light of the circumstances and things we had at our that were available
yes.
for us to use then, our disposal, that's what I wanted to say, we did pretty well.
Hmm.
And we've all looked back on it. There's a report on it somewhere. Other people went to real emergencies. I went to one true emergency, which was a fire. I went to two, actually. I went to a fire with my four most valuable helpers. They all turned out, although it was going to be overnight. It didn't turn out to be overnight, actually. They went home. I went home for a couple of hours and came back to prepare the breakfast, and the place was closed. But this was a fire, and it was really a good test, because we had people who'd come without their medication, we had children, we had elderly people,
mm-hmm.
And they'd all had to be moved out at a minute's notice. We had a rest centre very near to where they lived. We had another instance, which I didn't attend, but my other two people did, and they turned out at midnight to serve refreshments to the fire brigade at a local factory fire, and they had nothing at their disposal, so they knocked on the door of the local Asda.
Yeah.
And the man opened up for them. In those days we sort of had arrangements with various supermarkets to let us in. Anyway, he gave them tea and biscuits, and they took them to the site and served them, which I thought was good, because they'd all be 70 at that age.
Yeah.
So it was very good of them to get out of bed. They were a husband and wife and mm-hmm. a sister, and they were a good team. You see, Ron was the driver, and he was interested in our sort of work. And the only other thing I can think of doing was they ran a Calderdale hike, which was a 50-mile hike round the boundaries of Calderdale. This is a long time ago, probably back in 75 or something like that. And 400 people were coming, and they asked WRBS if we would cook the meals for them. So we cooked an evening meal, we cooked breakfast, we stayed all night, and served tea and whatever was mm-hmm. required with a team. And then we had various exercises, some which Janet Halsall, I mentioned to you, organised, some which the area organiser, somebody called Ray, used to do it. I bet Christine Manby knows all these names, but I've forgotten them, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And she would be involved when we were to go to Wakefield. Christine Manby was there.
Yeah.
Because she did an awful lot with emergency services. And then I think really we're still supposed to have an emergency team.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't all that long, although I'm not supposed to be the organiser of the emergency team any longer. Probably 12 months, 18 months ago. Yeah, probably 12. I got a call from somebody in WRVS asking me if I could possibly go and visit this elderly person who'd been left without electricity. Fortunately, it wasn't far from where I lived. But by the time I'd got myself organised, because it was night and I didn't know where this place was,
mm-hmm.
And my husband would come with me, they rang back to say a neighbour had dealt with it, so that was all right. So everything to do with WRVS lands on my doorstep still, because I'm the one person in Halifax that people remember.
Yeah.
The building, no, the bank, a bank account turned up with £400 in it, and eventually it landed on my doorstep. And after a great deal of trouble, the then organiser was still alive, and she is still alive. Both our organisers are still alive, actually, but she was able to sign the cheques, and I shared out the money with everybody's approval, I hope. £200 to the archives,
mm-hmm.
£100 to the one Darby and Joan club that was still going in Halifax, and £100 to Yorkshire Pub. Yeah.
And you sort of talked a little bit about how emergency services has changed over the years, but did the way you trained change at all?
Oh, yes. Yes, it did. I mean, they used to run courses at the emergency services in Yorkshire had a training centre at a place called Easingwold, where they trained fire, police and everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And every so often WRVS could send people to be trained. I did go there on one occasion, and you get talks from the police. And about that time, there were people flying in from somewhere. See, there have been so many now. I keep thinking, I remember collecting clothing and going to Leeds. That must have been the Ugandan Asians when they came to this country. And we went to sort clothing. And then we had the Kosovan refugees who came. And they came to Halifax, and they had several homes here, disused or old people's homes that were now in mothballs.
Yeah.
And one of our roles there was to go and put all the beds together and put the bedding on them and that sort of thing. But it has changed from just volunteers training volunteers. We had paid people whose job it was to train us.
Mm-hmm.
And of course it's much more a different setup completely now. At one time we liaised with the local authority and we were on their emergency lists. I'm not sure whether we are still on their emergency lists or not, because we haven't seen or heard anything about emergency services for a long time in Halifax. I think they put together five areas. Huddersfield, you might hear more from Huddersfield and Home Firth. Wakefield, Leeds, Bradford and Calderdale. There were five areas that clubbed together, but they really didn't seem to appreciate our emergency services in Halifax.
No.
A lot depends on the person who's organising it, whether they appreciate you.
Yeah.
We did do a couple of exercises with them, probably 6 or 7 years ago now, at least that. So it has changed. I'm pleased to know that they're still working down in the south, particularly. They seem to be stronger in the south when I read what reports there are these days.
Mm-hmm.
And of course we're all getting a bit too old. Nobody wants to turn out at night now. I don't mind if my husband will come with me,
mm-hmm.
but nobody else wants to do it, and I don't suppose he'd be too keen these days.
No.
But I really have had a lot of really good experiences with WRVS. I really mm-hmm. have. And I shall always remember it with gratitude. Yeah. Although I have been disappointed in latter years.
Mm-hmm.
But as I say, I'm coming round now. I do feel and hope that they have finally, as I said earlier, got their act together. Yeah. Mm.
And you mentioned as part of your emergency services work the Ugandan Asian and the Kosovan refugees. How did you feel about helping them when they arrived here?
Well, it wasn't face-to-face contact with mm-hmm. the Ugandan Asians. It was just going to Leeds to sort all this mountain of clothes. I can only think it was the Ugandan Asians.
Mm-hmm.
With the Kosovans, we were happy to go. WRVS did what the social services asked us to do. If anybody didn't want to go, they told me they didn't, but nobody ever told me they didn't want to go.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a rota. We made up all the beds in the two homes. Because Halifax is a small community, none of these places were very far away.
No.
And I live very centrally, so it was always easy for me to go to places. And then we established a rota to go down and help with the preparation of the meals and the serving of the meals. And then we used to go and take out some of these, I think it was the Kosovans. I've just forgotten who were the last lot to arrive here. Since the Kosovan refugees, I think we've had another group. But we established quite nice relationships with them because we used to take them out. I can remember taking these three ladies to the park. To my horror, they picked the fruit in the display garden. But I think they were just used to picking the fruit at home.
Yeah.
And for probably 12 months, we kept in touch with these people. The church, we went and I took books down and tried to help the girls to learn English.
Mm-hmm.
They went to school. I really don't know what's happened to them now, whether they're still established in Halifax. I did come across the oldest girl working in a hotel, but that's quite some time ago mm-hmm. now. So I really don't know what happened to them. Poor mother was very badly traumatised, and father had been tortured. But we never really got to know their circumstances because it was confidential. But nobody minded doing it.
No.
WRBS, we did what people asked us to do, what we were asked to do, which might have been knitting a pair of socks, giving out some old dripping, or going to the palace. Yes.
And was there anything else you did with emergency services?
Not that I can think of at the moment. There must have been other things. Mostly, I mean, we served tea.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly that was our role. Wherever we got, we served tea. But on a couple of these exercises, we were trained to do the reception. But the local authority really wanted their paid employees to do that. And of course they were computer literate in the latter days, so we were obsolete. But I mean, when WRBS Emergency Services started, during the war, I'm sure, when they had their rest centres for people who were bombed out, everybody's name who went in was written down and where they'd gone to. We used to have set books that were ruled out with columns at the top. When somebody came to the office, you've probably got them in the archives, somebody came to the office, you had the date, was reported to you, action taken, what you did about it, and you signed it off. And then you might have had another report at the other end. Worked very well. A lot of the things that are statutory services today mm-hmm. were started by WRBS. Look at the Meals on Wheels.
Yeah.
The clubs, Age Concern now, is doing an awful lot of the work that we used to do with clubs. Certainly here. I don't know how it works in other places. I think where WRBS have got a hub going, Pickering, I think, still has like a day centre where they do all sorts of things. Oh, so we used to do SAM. That was our spare a mile service.
Oh, yeah.
That was the one that took the old lady to the dentist's. I never really did that. Each little section had its own organiser who was responsible for running it.
Mm-hmm.
Did we do anything else? We once had voluntary daughters, they wanted to call it. It's very like the scheme now. They didn't call it voluntary daughters because when they put the initials down, it said VD and nobody liked it. You have another name for it now and I can't think what it is. But in our day, 40 years ago, that was what we called it. I can't think what they call it these days, but I know it if you tell it to me. And that was the idea that if anybody came out of hospital, we would go and spend a bit of time with them.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the people, not emergency services, if there was an emergency when I wasn't about, or one of the organisers wasn't about, the secretary took it on and found volunteers to do it. And I have one or two reports. Somebody once went to look after some children because their mother was in. The mother wanted to go and visit the father in hospital. That was actually with an ethnic group,
mm-hmm.
and up until about middle of the 70s, there were very few of the ethnic minorities in Halifax. I mean, there's quite a lot of them now, but they never seemed to have joined voluntary services with us.
No,
they would have been very welcome, but they never have done. But she went there and she looked after these children, and I thought to say that she was a pretty elderly spinster lady. She did remarkably well with these children. She was actually a dentist by profession, but she'd retired. Somebody else went to do something. I'd have to get the reports out. I've kept them because I thought they were interesting. And the very first report that I think was a very first emergency services report in Calderdale was written back in probably 1966, something long before we had Calderdale. And there were floods. You know, we've had a lot of floods recently, but there were floods down at Copley. And I distinctly remember a picture of the Director of Social Services, he was called, sitting in a rowing boat off the local park, being rowed round to look at these floods. I don't know why I was telling you that, but I know this very first report. And WRVS, our then organiser, they had a meeting. There was a social services man, somebody from WRVS, somebody from the police, I think, and they had a meeting and decided what plans they would draw up. It was long before this Cobra thing was even thought of. So WRVS have got a lot of things going that have now become statutory services. And it's a great credit, really, that they've become so. People forget to give us the credit for what we've done.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether there's anything else that I've done. I've done all sorts of things, really. Anything and everything, really.
And then, but you've also been a member of the WRVS Association.
Yes.
So why did you decide to join in 2000?
I can't really say that I can take any credit for the formation of the WRVS Association. It was a lady who'd worked in one of the afternoon clubs who decided that we should all stick together.
Mm-hmm.
And she canvassed the people who were working in the luncheon club. They were about the only people. We just had the luncheon club at that time and one afternoon club going. And these people decided that they would like to form part of the WRVS Association. Doing things like that has never really been my scene, but I did go and mm-hmm. I did enjoy it. And like all things, I ended up organising it. And we used to meet once a month. This lady organised us a room in the town hall. We were well thought of by the local authority. We used to have our annual general meeting every year in the town hall in the council chamber, in the days when WRVS had annual general meetings, attended by the mayor and any dignitaries, and medals were presented and things like that. I can find you some reports of those. So they started to meet once a month down at the town hall for coffee and tea and biscuits and have a speaker. And gradually the numbers dropped off, people died. The town hall provided the coffee, which became very expensive. And we decided that the people who were going were now doing the luncheon club down at Maurice Jagger once a month. And so we didn't really need to go to the WRVS Association.
Mm-hmm.
So we moved down to Maurice Jagger. We were the same people doing the luncheon club, so we still had the fun we used to have. And eventually the association closed. And we were sorry. I went to the last meeting that they mm-hmm. had in Birmingham. Yeah, it was sad, really, that it had gone. And I think a lot of the people, the old WRVS members who remember how it was, regretted that it had changed. But things have to change. Times change. It's just nice that the archives are going.
Yeah.
It really is nice. I mean, it is my ambition. That's why I've never sent these. I keep thinking one day I'll pack them up and we'll drive down to Devizes and I'll make arrangements. If I'd had my wits about them, I'd have packed them up and given them to you, wouldn't I?
Yeah.
But no, I'm not ready to send them yet. I've sort of gone off them at the moment. I seem to be busy with other things. Mm-hmm. So, but they will come to the archives eventually, and then you'll be able to sort out what is interesting. Mm-hmm. I've about 7 scrapbooks there. One of the things that I used to organise was somebody at the Derby and Joan Clubs or the Luncheon Club, in the days when the Courier, everybody sent a report to the Courier about what they did, somebody cut them out and pasted them all in books. So I've got several books there, ranging from about, I think the earliest one is something like 1949, with some old photographs in, going up to, latterly, to the Luncheon Club, really. Yeah. To begin with, we bought a scrapbook. Latterly, they were sticking them on the back of old calendars and things like that. But they're a good record of what we did.
And also in... So, a lot has changed over the time you've been
with
WRDS. Yes, it has. So, how did you feel when the organisation became a charity rather than the Crown Service in 1992?
Well, I realised that over the years, WRDS had a very large grant from the government. That must have been how they could maintain the premises that they did in London, and organise the things that they'd organised. And of course money generally became tight. I can't remember the year in which it became a charity. Do you know which year it became a charity?
1992.
I did realise it did make life more difficult. Although not so much for us, because all our projects were self-funding. Whether that's why the office premises closed or not, I don't know. Perhaps there just wasn't sufficient money to run all these things. I don't know how they bought the premises in Prescott Street, because it was really nothing to do with me then, mm-hmm. and I was just... Old People's Welfare Organiser. Yes. But I mean, I think we went in the 80s there. And I would think we left... Well, we were still there by 1997. I don't think I minded very much about it becoming a charity. The accounts were more difficult. We had to toe the line much more with the accounts. But that wasn't really a problem, because I'd always sent accounts. The local the area organiser always took the accounts.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. But it was good the way this sort of waterfall system that it had. And I'm sure, has anybody told you about the system for calling out the emergency the volunteers for the emergency services? Well, it went with the bucket that we had. We had like what they called, I think they called it a waterfall system.
Mm.
The organiser got the message, and then they telephoned somebody. And if that person could go, they then telephoned the next person. And if the next person wasn't in, they telephoned the next person. So it went round until we got sufficient people. You just telephoned through the list to find out who could come. And then we tried to make up a carload of people. I just thought of an emergency we helped with. They had floods in Keighley a few years ago, and some of our ladies went from here. Just one went on the bus all on her own, and the others went together, the brother and sister. No, the brother and wife. Husband and wife and sister that I mentioned, who were very good, they went, and I went on a couple of occasions to help, and we looked after the children on those occasions. We had a special mention in the paper and a special thank you for it. But that was a more recent and a real emergency. That was a countrywide emergency. I'm sure WRDS will have been busy, I hope, down in the south when they had the floods last year, were they?
A bit, yeah.
Yeah, people don't remember. And I think it's become... we always said that... we lost Meals on Wheels because a member of the local council felt that we should be providing jobs for people to do delivering Meals on Wheels, and the council could do that. But in fairness, I have to say that we never delivered meals at the weekends, and it is better if people can have a dinner 7 days a week.
Yeah.
And the council, when they have paid workers, are in the position to do that. But it's always been a sore point in Halifax, and people still remember it and still mention it when we lost Meals on Wheels, because that was the death knell for WRVS in Halifax.
And can you tell me about how an increase in paid staff in the 90s affected you as a volunteer?
Well, I don't know whether you'll want to put this in, but it affected us in Halifax in that our organiser came from Rotherham. She didn't seem to understand Halifax people. And if I'm absolutely honest, there was I always felt there was a bit of a personality clash between the two of us. So it probably isn't fair for me to say any more than that. I was disappointed when she closed down the office at the way things went into the skip. Perhaps there was nothing else she could do about it, I don't know, but as I said earlier on, I got a few things out of the skip that I felt were very much Calderdale. One of them was a very large picture showing our offices, an aerial view, and I brought it home and I kept it for quite some time, and then I offered it to another charity down in town and they were also on the photograph. So hopefully that's still displayed somewhere. But now that was something we bought out of our slush fund. We always had a slush fund for some reason. If we had we might have had a raffle to raise money, or we might have had a coffee morning in the office amongst the volunteers to raise money for things, for our slush fund. We always used to have a Christmas dinner. Oh, have we still got time? Have we run out?
No, it's fine.
Well, one of the really nice things we did was when the Queen Mother was 90, in our local park, we have this very nice park with a Tudor building in it, and it's called Shibden Park. We organised a marquee, and it was a beautiful day, and we planted a tree. I'm just going to tell you what sort of a tree it was in a moment. I think it was a willow tree. Unfortunately, it didn't survive very long because it was a year when it was a drought. But we had a lovely day in this marquee. WRVS members could come, and we had a lovely salmon salad, which we provided. The mayor came, and the dignitaries from Leeds came, the area organisers came, and it was really nice. I remember that with great affection, really, because it was a nice day and we all thought Queen Mother was the patron at that time. So we planted that. When it was the Queen's Golden Jubilee, we planted 50 golden roses in the same park, but they're no longer there. Don't know what happened to those, because that's not really so long ago, is it? Perhaps it was for the Queen's 40th, or perhaps it was for WRVS's 40th. I know when WRVS was 40, we had a float with a local charity gala, and we made an enormous cake with a big 40 on the top of it, and we walked behind it. The charity gala always walks from the town centre to another park, and we walked behind it. But that was when it was 40. One of our members, her husband had a sheet metalworks, and he provided us with one of these flat bed lorries that we could put this cake on. So over the years I've done all sorts and everything. Any more?
So we have talked about the office closures and things like that already, but in sort of 1997, when we changed our focus to emergency services, hospitals and old people's welfare, how did you feel about that?
Well, I suppose I felt it was a pity that we weren't doing a lot of the other things that we did. But things move on. I mean, the clothing was established by us. now people get vouchers to go and buy their own clothes, don't
mm-hmm.
they?
Yes.
Which must surely be better. Some people who came for the clothing were really grateful, and some people took bags and bags of stuff and ordered a taxi to go home. I can remember going to the office one day, and there was an old man standing outside dusting off one of these black Homburg hats that he'd just been given, and he was treating it with such respect. He was so pleased with it. The clothing people could tell you stories of all sorts of things. Yeah, they really could. But the question you asked me was
about
when it changed to hospitals. Well, hospitals didn't affect us because we had never done anything in hospitals. When we got an organiser, we had a gentleman to organise old people's welfare, or perhaps he might have been even the hospital organiser. He had a really good idea, which was never followed up, but they do it now in the hospitals. He suggested that volunteers might like to go into the hospitals and feed these elderly people their lunches, but it never sort of got off the ground. I don't know whether it got off the ground in WRVS anywhere else at all, but I mean, that was another thing that he'd thought of, and they're now having protective meal times, and poor folks are supposed to have their stuff left within reach and that, aren't they? That was something the WRVS emergency services in Otley, where they were very strong in the hospital, they made one or two suggestions there, and they got colour-coded cutlery for people, which I believe they have colour-coded things in present-day hospitals.
Yes.
I won't say it's cutlery, but because Otley had a very strong link with the local hospital. They're not so far out of Halifax. But you haven't been to North Yorkshire at all, have you?
Not yet.
Think you'll be going? Oh, good. Oh, well, you might see the people there then, because a lot of those were younger than me, so there'll be people there still, I'm sure. Weatherby, Otley. We used to meet them at meetings that we used to have at Berkenshaw. I know I said we went to Easingwold for training, but once Easingwold changed, the police... closed, the police and the fire had their own services at a place called Berkenshaw between here and Leeds, and we had one or two emergency services meetings there that our area emergency services organised. I keep saying it, I've had some really good times, and it has made my life, there's no doubt about it. It gave me a place in Halifax, because when I first came to Halifax I was Margaret Hiley's sister-in-law, or Kenneth Hiley's wife. Nobody knew me as myself, but they do now. And I gained a lot of confidence, and as I say, I learnt a lot of things through the training. And I enjoyed it. And I still don't want to put it down. I'm just waiting for something else to come up. One of the reasons I hang on to this luncheon club... I mean, some days it's a real effort to go when there's only me and perhaps three others to cook. And it isn't the cooking. I can do the cooking. It's the serving and the washing up that is the problem. It's the serving mainly, because we have a dishwasher, and all that happens is we just have to stay on until the dishwasher's finished. But getting the dinner served is difficult. Get tired, aren't I? I've lost my track. Just a minute there. What was I saying?
You talked about the holding on to the lunch club and waiting.
Yes, so that we've got some premises to meet in. They're very good premises. Part of me thinks it's time to tell them that Maurice Jagger to say, you take all the responsibility, you organise the cooking and just put us on a rota. They do it for Wednesdays and Thursdays, we do it on Fridays. They could do it every Friday, and perhaps we could, WRVS could make a rota with them.
Yeah.
But part of me is reluctant to give up what WRVS has always done. But if nothing happens soon, I think that's what we shall have to do. But none of us want to do that. We all want it to be our thing, really, with WRVS or RVS now. And in fact, our member who died about 6 or 8 weeks ago, she had the collection for RVS, which was very nice. And she wasn't really a member. She'd never filled in the membership form. She'd just sort of joined us. And because it became so difficult... to become a member with such a lot of checks and things, I had never really pushed it. I was always sorry I hadn't done in the latter years.
And what about the changes in 2004? So the colour and the change to just being called WRVS and...
Oh, to be called RVS, you mean? No?
In 2004 when we changed to orange and purple.
Oh, yes. Oh, I didn't like that. No question. Didn't like that. Didn't like the badge. Didn't like that at all.
Mm-hmm. And do you think it's better that we've gone back to the green and red?
Have we gone back, really? Because it's a bit insipid, is the green and red. When I tried to copy a badge off the internet, it was feeble. It came out grey. It wasn't good for when I wanted to make something. And I was asked to vote, and I thought that the grey and green won the vote. Do you know any different?
No, it's green, red, because the two O's are red and white, aren't they?
But this was to wear a sweatshirt, and they said the grey had won.
It's that grey-green sort of colour, I know which one you
No. Because I suppose in your archives you've read about why we're green and red?
Mm-hmm.
You know about it?
Yeah, we've got
it. And they were really good material and everything, the coats that they made. Mm-hmm. Just to be a joke at our house when I went out in my overcoat, if it rains and you get wet, you'll never be able to stand up straight because it was such lovely material. Yeah, I regret not having kept any of that uniform. Mm. Because we always used to buy our own uniforms. I think people still do. Well, I don't know. No, I think now the trolley shops and that, the hospital shops, they need to get their things distributed to them. But no, and the only hospital volunteers I've spoken to in the last 12 months were very disappointed to have it grey and green.
Mm-hmm.
Insipid. And we aren't insipid.
And how did you feel about dropping the W as well from...
I thought it was unnecessary. I've never met anybody who hasn't joined because it's a women's organisation. We had several men doing things and they were very good members and quite happy to belong to WRVS. Quite happy. But perhaps things change. So they tell me.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to be convinced that we've got more younger men in to swell the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Through changing the name, or that we've got more people. I mean, it's still very difficult to remember to call it RVS. And until we get a badge, people will never know. I haven't got any identification yet.
No.
Should I have?
Have you got a card, the ID card?
No.
No.
Not with RVS on, no.
Hmm. I know it is filtered.
I haven't, unless I've forgotten. I've got all cards in the drawer. No, I'm sure I haven't got anything with RVS on it, because I would have looked it out for that funeral. Because as the donations were coming to RVS,
mm-hmm.
there's going to be a problem with that, I think, but I'm waiting for it to crop up.
Mm-hmm.
I won't put it on your machine. No.
And what other changes have you experienced as a WRVS volunteer over the years?
I've seen a change in the type of people who volunteer. As I said, when I first started, it was almost ladies of leisure, mm-hmm. doctors' wives, people who didn't need to work, just the odd person. And then a lot of the workers who came to help us were really very, very good. And as I said, they'd worked in the mills. When people were 60, we got endless volunteers, even before people retired. Well, I suppose they did retire at 60, perhaps 65, I don't know. They came to us. Several of them were single women. All our volunteers, if they stayed 6 weeks, they stayed forever. They really were that sort of people. They never let you down. They replaced themselves on the rota if they couldn't come. They were always so reliable with WRVS. That is one of the things. And as Dorothy says, we're still caring. We're the caring side of WRVS. We aren't into making the money or keeping it running as such with a caring site giving the service. I know now people have to have paid administrators and we have to have somebody at the top. It's always a bone of contention how much these people are paid, and I'm not sure how much WRBS, what would you call this man who's in charge now?
Chief Executive.
Chief Executive. I'm not sure what sort of salaries they're on or not.
Mm-hmm.
But people do think they're on good salaries. I'm not so certain. But I realise, and I think most people do now, that if we're to compete in this modern world, we've got to have these people. Age Concern have their chief executive. Every organisation has its chief executive and its paid officials at the top. So WRBS or RBS has to be the same really to compete in this modern world. But I hope in 30 years' time somebody is still interviewing people who say what a good service it has been and it still is.
Yeah.
I'm sure down south and in one or two other places it's a very good service. I'm not sure whether they don't... They still do something in Huddersfield. They do a luncheon club,
yeah,
but they don't cook the meals. They bring the meals in and they just serve them.
Mm-hmm.
And if ever my club closed, I would see if I could go there, because I do want to get my 50 years in. Although it's a funny number. It isn't 50 years. It's 51 if you want another bar on your... It was a funny... Did you realise that? You got a 15-year medal. You got... a 27-year medal, you got you got a bar, which was a bar or a rose. It was a rosette. You got a 39-year one, and you got a 51. I don't know why they're such funny things, unless they decided that we had to have 15 years because people who were 60 during the war and 70 during the war were dying off and not being recognised. I really don't know. Perhaps I'm wrong. I'm sure it was 39. I haven't got anything for 39. I got a badge that said 40, I think. But originally you got a little silver rose to sew onto your braid.
Yeah.
Which when we all wore it, anybody like a local organiser was expected to wear a uniform.
Yeah. Really.
And then you got a braid to wear with badges on. I know those things don't count as much these days, but they counted a lot in those. People were really proud of their WRBS badge and their old WBS badges. I'm proud to say my mother was in WBS. I have a member now whose mother was in WBS. She can remember going round with her mother doing things. There'll be one or two like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they were a mother and daughter team who ran a trolley shop with the father for many years. But until 1973, I never came into contact with those people, because before reorganisation, everything was just the County Borough of Halifax.
Yeah.
And then we became the Metropolitan District of Calder, which brought in several areas. The Sorby Bridge area had always been very good with Meals on Wheels and everything like that. And it just got absorbed into Calderdale. So I took on extra responsibilities. There were several new trolley shops to organise. Only one, Derby and Joan Club. And we still call it Derby and Joan Club.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember them getting a write-up in the local paper with my name, and because I had suggested that we should change the name, and the editor of the local newspaper didn't agree. He wrote something about what's wrong with being Derby and Joe. And of course you'll know the story of why it was Derby and Joe. Or why we think it was Derby and Joe. You've seen that photo, that painting, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
Anything more?
And so in your opinion, what has been the most significant change that you've experienced?
The role of WRBS, what it used to do and what it does now.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the biggest change. And bringing in the paid executives, if that's the right word.
Yeah.
Those are the main changes. on the ground, it's still very much the same sort of people doing the same sort of work, but very much reduced work when you think of all the sections of work that we did.
Mm-hmm.
You all know about those because you'd be keeping the archives. If I came to the archives, I'd be reading and reading. I'd never file anything away because I'd be reading it all. Oh dear.
Do you want to pause it for a minute?
Mrs. Johnson and myself about getting help with things.
Mm.
And we could either go with them or direct them to the right department in the council. Mostly it was housing. Mrs. Johnson was very good at getting people into housing. We were talking about
the very significant change, yeah, you were saying about bringing in the executives and,
yes, yeah, I think
people like that.
And the work that they do.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say it was as interesting now.
No.
Not as varied. And in a way, we aren't remembered like we used to be. People don't know who we are now. Even that instance when I said that two of my emergency team people knocked up the manager at Asda. Is it working?
Yes, it is.
Knocked up the manager at Asda and took these things to the fire brigade. Some weeks later, I went along to the fire brigade headquarters to ask if I could organise a room. And he said to me, "What is WRBS?" And I said, "Don't you know? We brought you tea and biscuits a few weeks ago," but they didn't know.
No.
Tea and biscuits just came.
Mm-hmm.
So, and one of the other things is, in latter years, we haven't been able to organise ourselves if there was an emergency or something. We haven't been free to just pick up and go to things.
No.
Which could be a good thing or could be a bad thing. And that's reminded me of another exercise we had. We used to work fairly closely in the early days with the search and rescue team, the local search and rescue team. Now they're much more streamlined, but that was another thing the emergency services did. They used to have a training weekend every year, and we used to go on the Saturday night and cook their evening meal. We went on Sunday morning at 5 o'clock to get their breakfast ready, and then we cooked another meal for them on Sunday evening while they were out practicing. And people, we were pleased to go. We loved going. Yeah, people were really keen. Oh, I'll put so-and-so in this lasagna that I'm going to make. But we always did meat and potato pie.
Yeah.
And we always carved WRBS in the pastry. Yeah, meat and potato pie was popular, and it's easy.
Mm.
And I mean, I'm still making meat and potato
pie,
I wouldn't like to say. But by the time we'd finished the luncheon club, we'd served 85,000 meals, and we'd peeled all the potato and cooked all the meat and everything. Yeah. You don't need as many potatoes and as much custard as you think you do for 60 people. Well, we weren't 60. The numbers had dropped off.
Yeah.
Yeah, we weren't 60. I don't know why. Because there weren't so many elderly people to come for these things. Elderly people now, this is another big change. A 60-year-old now is not a 60-year-old as they were when I joined WRBS.
Mm-hmm.
No. They're out now, dancing and playing balls and doing all these things. Whereas before, people, or the ones I came into contact with, were just glad to go and sit and be entertained. We're having a 100th birthday party for one of our best and most loyal members, and latterly, helpers to begin with, and latterly a club member in November. I said to her last week, "You better keep going, Dora." She said, "The way I feel, I won't be here." "Don't you pop off before." Then she started, the first time I knew her, she started at about 65, she might even have been 70, helping at the luncheon club that we established in town, where she's very outspoken, and I have to say she's upset a great many people, but she is the salt of the earth when it comes down to it. And now she just comes for a coffee with us, and then she goes to another luncheon club, which I don't mind. I'm pleased for her to go, because she can go every Friday for her lunch there. She can only have it every 3 weeks with us, and it's not the same. So we'll be planning this 100th birthday and hoping that she keeps going long enough. but she's been a real stalwart member. She really has.
And where would you say Royal Voluntary's place in society is today?
Well, I think there's a place for us, even more so now with the ageing population. And as I said right at the beginning, I feel that that's got to be our role now. I'm not certain that emergency services is appreciated because, again, Salvation Army get called in before WRVS. Red Cross are very strong. People volunteer in their own communities now. But I do think there's something in this role for the elderly. I really do, keeping them in their own homes as long as they can, because I can see that's the way it's going.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say is the future for the organisation?
I hope there will be less changes. I hope that people will get to know us and respect us and love us as they did in the old days. I'm sure there are still people somewhere who still appreciate us. But the people who knew WVS in its beginnings are all now dying off, and people are not, don't even know who WVS are or WRVS. As my example of the firemen didn't know. Which is sad, but that's the way it goes. It was really the work that WVS did during the war, I think, particularly the serving the tea and that to the troops, that made them remember. And the number of people who've remembered WVS from the wartime, it's lovely. I should have got my poem out to read to you. Can you turn off for a second while I look for it?
Yeah, or you can look for it in a minute because I've just got...
Oh, okay.
I only got...
Yes, all right. I'll look for it.
So what would you say is your most treasured memory of being with WRVS?
Well, I suppose it would seem funny if I didn't say going to the palace and representing WRVS at St James's Palace when we met all the important people to try and raise funds. And after that, the comradeship that we've had.
Mm-hmm.
And I have enjoyed helping people. It's never been a chore to me. I'm thinking about one old lady. We had a call at WRVS one afternoon. A Friday afternoon. I'd got a beautiful pink Grazia suit on because I must have been in town. And the police rang in and our secretary said to me, "Can you go to this house?" So I went to this house. I'd never been up this little back street before, and it was in a really poor part of town. This lady answered the door to me. She was dressed all right, but the house was an absolute tip. The best thing that I always remember about her was she wore glasses, and her glasses were always clean and shiny. Miss McCabe, she was called. And I said the police had asked me to call to see if she was all right, because she'd had a window broken. So she asked me in. There was no electric light, there was gas light. She slept on the settee, on a set of rags, as it appeared to me, and she had umpteen cats. And these cats jumped all over me in my nice pink suit. It was on my shoulder, it was everywhere, these cats. And she said, no, there weren't really anything we could do for her. She was all right. She was a very independent old lady. She must have been 80 plus, at least. And shortly after that, we had the years of the power cuts. And I can remember going, before I went to work in the morning, pushing a candle through her door. I don't know why. Because candles were in short supply.
Yeah.
When everybody had no electricity, they bought up all the candles, and I'd got some spare ones. So I can remember pushing these candles through her door before I went to work in the morning. The cats, I said to her, "Are you sure you want all these cats?" She said, "No, they were a nuisance." So in the end, the RSPCA went and took several of them away. And then she would have Meals on Wheels. And then I used to visit her, and she belonged to the Catholic Church, and the Catholic Church opened four sort of flatlets near to the church, and they gave her one of those. And so for years I visited her down there. Eventually she became bedridden. She just lived in bed, mm-hmm. and I used to go and see her. I used to bring her sheets home and wash them for her. I ended up doing her finances, collecting her pension and paying her rent. And finally, she was found collapsed when they went with some dinners, and they took her to hospital, and they said she was suffering from hypothermia. Mm. She just lived in a cold house. She'd always lived in a cold house all her life. It was not that, I'm quite certain. And I went to see her in hospital, and instead of being a perky old lady sitting up in bed, she was slumped in her chair, and she didn't live long after that. No. But I had all her money accounted for, and her nephew came from London to see me, and we sat in this cafe down in town, and I handed over all the money.
Mm-hmm.
Funnily enough, he came back to live in Halifax a few years ago, and I came across him and his wife. So I remember so many things about so many people. I bet so many people. Mm-hmm. And as you go through life, you meet people who touch your life. And I've certainly met a lot of those.
And is there anything else you'd like to share about your time with WRVS?
No, I don't think so. I think you better switch it
off. Yeah. Well, thank you, Gillian, for talking to me today. And this will make a really interesting contribution to our Voices of Volunteering.
Good. Well, I'm pleased.
Done.